The more sumptuous the zombie takeout, the more it turns my stomach.
Hello and welcome to episode 443 of Zombie Takeout. I actually got it right this time. I've been screwing it up a lot lately. and before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted from Bodo. Sorry, guys. Due to feeding the world, I have to skip this week's movie. No problem, Bodo. This one was particularly hard to find, and frankly, you're better off. Just a thought. Do you think in Excalibur they would have had a whole village dedicated to nothing but shining armor? Maybe if they didn't have so much shiny armor, they could have worked on special effects.
Well, the shiny armor was a special effect, wasn't it?
And that really, effects weren't really the issue with the movie.
No,
it was more the plot and the writing. Also, some news and a bit of something else. Just a quick mention of the Oscars, because we don't really talk about them these days.
No.
But I was very happy that Soul won Best Animated, the latest Pixar movie. If you haven't seen it, you absolutely need to. It's brilliant.
You know, I meant to watch that before Disney Plus expired. Mm. I'll probably hit it when we... When a Star Wars series comes along that we're really into.
Yeah. The Bad Batch is starting soon. I don't know if you're really into that one.
I probably wouldn't. I'll probably watch it when we get it along, you know, with something else.
Yeah, but. Of course. But Soul is easily the best Pixar movie. Yes, better than Up. Highly recommend it. I'm glad it won Best Animated. Also, on the other end of the spectrum, in a sense, I saw Mortal Kombat over the weekend.
Oh.
The new one.
Yeah.
Take the 90-something, the 90s one, improve the acting and the special effects, and you get the new one. It's fun. It's mostly fan service. There's some good action, some really fun fatalities. Don't expect more than that.
But, I mean, I heard they just didn't have the spirit of the game, you know. It didn't seem like they got why the game was popular.
Well, that kind of game is not suited for a movie.
Well, true, yeah.
You know, it's
in fact,
not
Double Dragon would have been a better movie than Mortal Kombat.
I think they did a Double Dragon movie.
Oh, boy.
But
I smell trilogy.
But, you know, it's not suited for a movie because it's about the experience of playing the game. There's no real plot there. But if you're going to make, you know, a MK movie, they did the best movie they could, I think, with the material. I enjoyed it. You know, just make sure your expectations are set properly.
But the Oscar movies this year for me, I mean, oof. There's a handful that I've heard a lot about. I don't think I really heard of Anthony Hopkins' movie until, that night.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was still acting.
He was being interviewed by it. And I'm sure they mentioned it in the interview, but I think I had it confused with Viggo Mortensen's movie about dealing with his father and having dementia, which did not get nominated for diddly. In fact, the only reason why I found out about that really. Well, I heard of Viggo Mortensen's interview, but when we reviewed the House movie with Bishop from Alien, he's the father in the Viggo Mortensen movie, pretty much, you know, the Anthony Hopkins role, you could say.
Right.
So, and then there were a few movies that I had no idea even existed, like a live-action Pinocchio. When the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, I pay too little attention to mainstream at this point, I'm realizing. Because I've at least heard about most of the nominated films, you know, and I have a basic idea what they're about. Last couple of years, I've had no idea, except for Soul.
I keep my ear to the ground pretty, you know, decently. You know, I'd heard of Nomadland and I can't remember the female revenge movie. But, you know, and I'm kind of interested in seeing some of them, but, I mean, I just haven't.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch, though, that I've never heard of that were like, wait, what? The one I really want to see most out of this was Sound of Metal, actually.
I have no idea what that's about.
Oh, that is like a really good one. That I'm really curious about that one. It's about a musician who goes deaf.
Oh, okay.
And he's just trying to deal with that. Right. So, I mean, that's definitely one I'd love to see.
Yeah. Anyway, on to this week's movie, which thankfully got nowhere near the Academy Awards.
Yeah, that was our uninformed Oscar roundup.
Yeah, I guess. And it is from 1984, Sword of the Valiant, concluding our fantasy trilogy. I'm just going to call it a trilogy now because next week is not fantasy. And also concluding our impromptu King Arthur two-parter. And of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Unicorn Meat. It's magical. It has to taste good.
And also brought to you by Riddles, a question or statement intentionally phrased so as to require ingenuity in ascertaining its answer or meaning, typically presented as a game, not a series of experiences to gain wisdom.
Yeah, it would suck if you messed that up for like an entire movie.
Right, if your movie plot, that's the main crux of it. Yeah. All right. So, we have the Great Hall. I didn't see a single fucking round table in there. That was been my other sponsor.
Yeah. Well, he's actually referred to as the king. They kind of kept the King Arthur thing on the down low, except it's Gawain.
Who else would it be? Also brought to you by the round table. When you do a movie, an Arthurian movie, have a round table.
I mean, unless it was another Dwayne or Gawain, or Gawain was moonlighting with another king.
It was Gawain Wade. I don't know. I mean, it's Gawain Reed.
There we go.
That is how the drugstore originated. Uh-huh. Fun fact. All right. So, no round table. They're about to have a feast, but the king is not happy that they're having a feast, even though he probably ordered the feast himself. But he's just tired of all of his knights being a bunch of hangers-on and just the excess. And so in the middle of all of this, a green knight enters the room on horseback, which I guess that's why there was no round table, because then the horse couldn't go through the middle of the room.
Also, he was only green occasionally in a few shots.
You know what? It's funny that we mentioned that glowing armor effect. I think they used that, only they used green lights.
Okay.
But I don't think they did it as well as they did at Excalibur, which was just like, wow, that is some shiny armor. Okay. He looked like he was just coming from a rave or something. And in fact, there were some scenes where the green light also went on Gawain when he was wearing the armor too. So it was like, he's not the green knight; he's the gold knight now.
Yeah.
So he enters the room and he challenges any takers for a game of chop your head off, which is in the actual original one of the original stories at least.
It's kind of like punch for punch, but fatal.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of made me wonder, maybe Highlander cast the wrong guy as the Kurgan. I don't know. Clancy Brown, of course, made Highlander, let's be honest.
Wasn't this the same year as Highlander?
It's 84? About 4 years. I think it was a couple years earlier.
Oh, okay. I thought it was 84. Okay.
Yeah. So none of the knights take them up on this challenge because, well, this guy's a fucking nutcase, and why would you take this challenge? But the king decides he's going to do it himself, which is also weird. But hey, you know, that's what he wants to do. That's his idea of honor, is to let's chop this guy's head off. Let's play a game of behead.
When someone strolls in and suggests something like that, in a world where magic exists, you have to know it's a scam.
Right. And so he's a Scottish prince, I guess, instead of a Nigerian prince. And Well, I guess that doesn't really go if he's just going to, if we're just talking beheadings here.
Yeah.
So he, nobody takes him up. And when the king does, well, just like in last week's movie, the only guy that really wants to get things done is the squire. Apparently he's a pretty shitty squire because he didn't know how knights you relieve themselves whilst in the suit of armor.
So
which of course Gawain
was a squire at this point?
Yes.
Okay, I missed that.
Yes. So, like, you know, he shames the rest of the knights. The only people, the only person willing to stand up to be my champion
right.
is a squire. Okay. And that's when he gets knighted on the spot, just like in last week's movie. Only it was to defend the honor of, I forget her name now, but to defend the honor of the king's lady last week.
Guinevere,
right.
You forgot Guinevere?
Yeah, I did. Gawain, Guinevere, Benevere. You know, it's like, do they all really have to rhyme, guys? Did they not have possession of more names back in the 15th or 12th century? Come on, guys. You had 1,000 years to do this. But anyway, so the kid does it. He gets knighted. He takes his good swing, and my God, the realistic head of Sean Connery is down on the floor. It was like, how did they do this?
If only they had a quarter of the budget of Excalibur.
I don't know. I mean, come on. We see stuff in Troma that looks better than
this. That's what I'm saying. If only they had a quarter of the money that Excalibur threw at effects.
I mean, this movie had to have had a budget in itself, too, because...
Mm-hmm. Well, Connery.
They fucking got Sean Connery. They got Peter Cushing. They got the cast of Indiana Jones. Half the cast of Indiana Jones. So, they... right, so he beheads him, but of course that, spoiler alert, does not kill him. Because, I mean, wouldn't it be funny? They just roll credits. Like 2 minutes into the movie. Drive safely, everybody. Then the Monty Python theme.
That would have been much better.
Yes, it would have been. So, which of course means this unlucky squire turned knight is going to be killed, but they need to have a movie. So he gives him a year, and he gives him a riddle to solve. And
although it's not really a riddle, I mean, even when it's stated, it's not a riddle.
Right. There's no, who am I? There's no, what is it? There's no, what do these things, I mean?
There's no question.
Just, right. There's no question. They just statements. And you have to solve this riddle, you know, the year. And it turns out, he's sending him on a quest, because if that was the other thing, like, wait, why would he need to go on a quest to solve a riddle? I mean, is he going to find a wise person to solve the riddle for him? But it turns out when they say riddle, they just mean life experiences to gain wisdom, and that will save his life.
Well, the Green Knight decides he's not going to kill Gawain because Gawain as a kid hasn't really lived. You know, gives him a year to live.
Yes. So he goes on this quest.
Oh, and grow his beard. More on that later.
He goes on this quest. He meets a princess, of course. They fall in love ridiculously fast. Although it sounds like she has met him before or something, which was really weird. And I
never quite know if it's actually her or if it's Morgana Le Fay fucking with him.
Very true. You know, that would have been an awesome twist in the end if it was Morgana.
Well, in the end, it's Lynette, the actual princess. But half the time when we see Lynette, it's actually Morgana screwing with him.
Yeah. That would have been awesome. You've written a better movie right there. So yeah, he goes on the quest. There's the princess. The princess gets kidnapped, or they get separated
very randomly, which kidnapped. I think may have been Morgana.
And then, well, There's a rescue, of course, and then a big final confrontation, and then the knight that comes back to play the game, and hilarity ensues.
Anytime I see Miles O'Keefe in a movie, Miles O'Keefe played Gawain, I'm always reminded of an MST3K joke.
I'm not familiar with any of his other work.
He was in, I think it's called The Cave Dwellers, and a movie that was, you know, parodied on, or you know, riffed on MST3K. And one of the lines was, how much Keefe is in this movie? Miles O'Keefe.
That's a good one.
And there was Miles O'Keefe in this movie, way too much. Writer and director Stephen Weeks wanted to cast Mark Hamill as Gawain.
That is not surprising at all, because the...
Right off the back of the trilogy.
Right from the beginning of this movie, the opening music is pretty much a medieval renditioning of the Star Wars theme. Yeah. As legally, you know, close as you can get without a...
The director wanted to cast Hamill. Producers cast O'Keefe. O'Keefe's voice was dubbed by Peter Firth. So only half of the blame can go to O'Keefe for the performance.
Really? So that was Firth?
The voice was Firth, yeah. Peter Firth. Wow. Peter Firth, not Colin Firth.
Oh, okay.
The score you mentioned, though, that dates the hell out of it. I mean, it's not as bad as Lady Hawk, but it's close.
No. I honestly, like, the score, if it wasn't as much of a ripoff tonally, it's probably the closest we've heard to a fantasy movie or medieval period movie out of all of them, I think, because it isn't as like last week was like the disco, weird
thing. And it wasn't like the pop songs from you know, Lady Hawk, but it still smacked if somebody bought a synthesizer and wanted to play around with it.
Was it like Alan Parsons did one? Was that what I'm thinking of remembering?
Was it last? If it was last week. Not this.
Was that like Lady Hawk? I think was Alan Parsons.
Very well, could have been Lady Hawk. Yeah.
It was just like, wait, what?
But overall, I just got a Wizards and Warriors vibe from this movie. It's like cheap TV fantasy in movie form, and the costumes very Mel Brooks. When I first saw the King, I immediately thought of that guy Ronnie something or other. Always played. Those, you know, king or president roles in Brooks movies, you know, the priest, all those sort of things.
Oh, Cook?
Okay, I don't remember his last name, but you know who I'm talking about.
I think I do.
Yeah. The King immediately reminded me of him.
Like, even Gawain's white outfit was just like a tighter version of Luke Skywalker's farm wear. That white thing with like the brown leather.
And did they have to give him the wig? It was like He-Man meets Prince Valiant.
At first I thought it was Bullock from Too Close for Comfort. Yeah.
No, this was like Prince Valiant, He-Man, you know, bangs and, you know, the big sides and the whole nine. It was, at least they didn't waste time bringing in Connery. You know, they didn't spend it 30 minutes setting the thing up.
My notes from the credits. You think Cushing's going to be a bad guy?
Where was Cushing? I did not notice him.
He was the advisor to the evil king.
Okay.
Like, he was the one that they brought out to the battle on, like, the little, like, thing
that he's resting in.
Yeah. You probably didn't recognize him with, like, longer hair.
Right, yeah. I'd have to rewatch. I'm not going to rewatch, but But once they bring Connery in, he's better than anything else in the movie, and that goes for all of his scenes.
I'd say Cushing was my favorite. But then again, I could watch him do everything.
Cushing, Connery, John Rhys Davies.
Oh, yeah, and he was just there for me. He was having a lot of fun in this.
Yeah. And it's just like one scene. But at least we didn't get a beard-growing montage, because that's half what I expected when he left before he left the castle. I thought we were going to get a beard-growing montage.
It would have almost made a more interesting movie.
Well, arguably, the entire movie is a beard-growing montage, depending on how you define beard. I mean, he did grow his... He could have arguably grown his beard and solved the riddle. Not sure how I feel about the scene where his squire gives him what I'm calling the can opener.
Well, I think it was... It's stupid, though. He was a squire. Yeah. Of course he would know how to get a knight out of the armor.
Gawain can't figure out how to take a leak in his armor. And his squire hands him this thing that honestly does look like a manual can opener.
Yeah.
In order to remove his codpiece. At least it answers the question.
Well, all it did was remind me of last week's, where Gabriel Byrne is, I guess you could say, date raping the...
oh, God.
In a suit of armor.
Uh-huh.
A full battle suit of armor.
Right. Yeah, how did that work exactly?
Yeah.
And then he
tried... How is she not going, ow, you are chafing me? Yeah.
And then he attempts to kill a unicorn. That right. just doesn't bode well for anybody.
None of that made any sense either. Why would he... Oh, it's magical and it's bad luck if you kill it. And they're like, oh, we're going to eat anyway.
Now, this is based on the 14th century poem, Gawain and the Green Knight. Markedly different storyline, of course. You're vaguely familiar with the poem. Was Gawain an absolute idiot in the poem, too?
I don't believe so. I mean, I'm only familiar with this from hearing Joseph Campbell tell the story. Same with last week in the Arthurian, legends.
I know a bit more.
Tell a number of them.
About the basic Arthur myth, legend, but, Gawain, not so much. He was the pure one, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's just insanely gullible in this movie.
He does seem to fall for just about any... He kind of likes the thief, the friar thief.
Yeah.
Who I think if he had more of a role in this, it might have been a little better.
I enjoyed the character. There just wasn't much of him.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed the guardian of Lyonnais. Really reminded me of Zardoz.
Right. And then, but then the whole nonsense of the queen wanting to, marry him and then tell us of her marital woes was just really, did we need this?
But before we get to that, the fight between the guardian and Gawain, nice to see Gawain get the shit beaten out of him for a little bit there.
That was one of my favorite parts, going, you realize it's just ceremonial, right? fun years. Yeah.
And then they're fighting with daggers in suits of armor. It just kind of seems pointless.
I was expecting the guitar solo from Beat It when they were
doing
that.
But it kind of made me ponder the knights a little bit. Because, Lancelot stole Guinevere. Percival passed up on the Grail. And here Gawain is just sort of a general tool. Were any of the knights actually good or useful?
Well, maybe that's why they didn't last so long.
I'd already read the trivia about Hamill, and I'm just couldn't help thinking how much better he would have been in the role.
They were looking for a guy that was ripped, though, right? I mean, that's what the producers wanted, I guess. Yeah.
And they wanted the heartthrob, and maybe he was popular. I can't imagine in 84 he was more popular than Mark Hamill, but I don't know. But it would have just been much easier to deal with because, and I don't know if this is O'Keefe or Firth or both, but everyone he talked to, he seemed like he was hitting on.
Right. And I did look up his IMDb after, you told about casting him. And the only thing that he did before this was that Tarzan movie where nobody was looking at him because Bo Derek was in it.
Well, Keith did quite a bit before this.
Really?
But he wasn't well-known, of course.
Right.
Certainly not on a Hamill level. So I don't get the casting of O'Keefe. Maybe it was a nepotism thing. Maybe somebody knew somebody who knew somebody.
My guess was it's cheaper.
That, too. Well, yeah, producers wanted to cast O'Keefe. He's cheaper. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Hamill was probably the highest of his career at this point.
Hamill was asking for a lot of money at that point. Right.
Fair point. Now, The scene where Linnet, the princess, was kidnapped seemed awfully random. It was like, okay, yes, we need to extend the movie and throw a little wrench in. We'll just have her randomly kidnapped.
And to have some form of antagonist other than Sean Connery, who isn't really an antagonist in the end.
No, no.
Or a very bad antagonist.
Yeah, yeah. About an hour in, I was just starting to wish that the Green Knight had actually just taken his head in the beginning.
Roll the credits.
And then he ends up jousting this knight who honestly looked like the bastard child of Wallace Shawn and Clint Howard.
You know who that was, right?
Who was it?
That's the bad Nazi from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, okay. It's been ages since I've seen Raiders. So, I just kept thinking of Wallace Shawn when I saw the guy. I just couldn't take him seriously, especially as a knight.
He did. He did have a very Wallace Shawn look about him.
Yeah. And then the Green Knight's death scene was just incredibly cheesy.
Yeah, you can't have that be your climactic scene of just this something turning gray and crumbling like that.
Incidentally, Connery was working on Never Say Never Again at the same time he made this movie, which is why he's only in like three scenes.
Well, that they only had so much money to pay him.
Oh, that too, yeah. Well, sequels and remakes, no.
That's a hard no.
And there was there were no like books or games or anything to follow.
No.
So
no.
I don't even have that on the brains.
I appreciate they did the too quiet bit.
Yeah.
How often do you see that where it's not done ironically?
Yeah.
It's quiet here. Too quiet.
Underbrains. I'm giving it a half a brain each for Connery, Rhys Davies, and Cushing, 1.5.
I'm going to give it 2.5. It's right down the middle for me. Some very embarrassing special effects. A really bad story, considering, you know, they couldn't decide whether a riddle or a quest is. But the cast, you know, the bad guys alone are the thing really to watch this.
So what have we learned?
We learned that the bad Nazi from Indiana Jones looks a lot, when he has hair, looks a lot like Benny Hill.
And I learned that even Sean Connery, John Rhys Davies, and Peter Cushing aren't enough to save a movie from Miles O'Keefe and now apparently Peter Firth. And that's it for Sword of the Valiant and our fantasy trilogy. Till next time, we'll be reviewing A Flesh and Blood, a medieval movie, but it's not fantasy. There's no magic or anything. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.